PhonePe Pulse, beat of progress, powered by Money Control.
The digital payments revolution has transformed lives as we know it, compared to 2015, 2016, where we could not do without cash, without cards. It's easy to go out in Bengaluru today just with your phone, leave your wallet behind at home, and you'll be sorted for payments of any kind. That's the level to which digital payments has scaled in India. But with opportunity also come challenges. The demands on payment players to provide speed, reliability, privacy has also increased with the amazing scale that they have attained in terms of volumes and value of payments. And the leader in this space is clearly PhonePe, which is the UPI leader today. If you look at digital payment volumes, in fact, we have PhonePe's co-founder and CTO Rahul Chari joining us on this latest edition of PhonePe Pulse Beat of Progress conversation series. We will be talking with him on how the technology that goes behind payments, how to make it more reliable, more safer, even as we see more and more Indians taking to digital payments. Rahul, thank you so much for joining us for this special conversation. When you were building PhonePe or when you launched PhonePe, UPI was just a buzzword. Even people within the industry did not really know what this is, what the potential could be. But now, if you look at apps such as PhonePe, GPay, Paytm, and the others, it's almost become ubiquitous. It's all around us. Everyone has a QR code board in front of them, whether it's the street vendor or a shopkeeper. But when you were building the payment stack for UPI, you know, what went through your mind? What was the philosophy that you had? Because there was no precedent here. You couldn't really turn to precedents either in India or around the world to decide on how you need to build the tech stack, the payment stack for PhonePe. So take us through that journey.
Hi, Chandra. Great to be here in conversation with you on the PhonePe Pulse series. Yeah, when we started PhonePe, UPI was a concept, getting close to reality, but it really wasn't there yet. In fact, this was before even the UPI hackathon, where we had the first view into how UPI would really look like from a transaction, consumer transaction perspective. So when we started building, we had a couple of key design principles or guiding principles that we applied to how we'd look at the entire technology stack. One of the most important things that we decided at that point is we were so excited about UPI because we felt that it would completely revolutionize payments in India, retail payments. And in that case, if it did work, it would mean that the entire population, the 1 billion population, would actually onboard onto the UPI bandwagon. And if we were to build possibly one of the best products out there on top of UPI, a large part of that user base and those transactions would come on our platform. So from day one, we actually built for what we call as a billion-dollar scale or a billion population scale. What that meant was that we ensured that we don't try to actually build a technology stack that kind of tests the waters before which we can then look at what are the changes we need to make and then decide to actually go and build. So we took what is called typically as a over-engineering approach to building out our core stacks, our payment stacks, our accounting stacks, our risk and fraud stacks, where we were already building for millions of transactions to be conducted on our platform on a daily basis. Today, we stand at close to 100, 110 million transactions on PhonePe and more than 200 million transactions on UPI as a whole on a daily basis. And the same architecture and design that we actually had on day one continues to serve that scale. And if you think like that, right, as a player, it'll actually influence a lot of your tech decisions very, very early on. Those could be the decisions around what is the kind of programming stack that you use. What is the kind of data store that you use? What is your architecture like? What is the true microservices architecture you want to go with? What are the unbundled services or ecosystems within your own infrastructure that are needed to interact with other players in the ecosystem? Today, the one big learning looking back is that when something like UPI, which has scaled from zero to what, 5+ billion transactions on a monthly basis in such a short period of time, when such a phenomenon comes along, you don't have the luxury to take any time out to actually build for scale. So there are broadly two sets of actors in this ecosystem, right? There's one where there is an opportunity to build greenfield, and there's another where the players are very entrenched and have legacy systems, but actually have to also play an extremely important role in this entire digital payments journey. Both of them have to actually think with a very strong future provisioning approach when it comes to technology. You have to build at least with a view of 5 years out, or maybe 3 years out, if not 5 years, and try to see what is the kind of scale you'll achieve there. And this may require a very, very different approach depending on which bucket you fall under. On the first bucket, you have the luxury to be able to actually invest, but you have to invest deep and very early on, which is a tough decision for many folks. On the second side, it may actually, where you have legacy systems, you may actually need to invest in a parallel system that you're building for the future that doesn't have any returns immediately, with a strong migration plan that may take a year by itself to the new system so that you're able to deal with the scale of the future. So I think those have been some of the learnings that we've had, and we continue to actually operate in that mode where if we are able to support the 110 million transactions today, we take a view of what are we truly benchmark for? Are we benchmark for 200 million transactions? And if we are benchmark for 200 million, what is the things that we have to do? Is it a complete overhaul? Are there incremental improvements and optimizations so that we can actually cater to 400 million transactions a day? That's the continuous cycle that we are in. And that's what I think all of us have to be to kind of realize this dream of being able to support retail payments for a billion population.
Right, Rahul, some amazing numbers there. In fact, if I look at, you know, the PhonePe Pulse BCG report recently, it's actually said that the Indian digital payments market, it's projected to triple to $10 trillion by 2026, which is just 4 years away. So that's a massive number. You spoke about how you've built for population scale right from day one. But, you know, will these guiding principles change as you approach this humongous number? Because people have come to expect a certain degree of speed and reliability from PhonePe.
I think it's a great question. And it's mind-boggling, right? Crazy. 10 trillion in 3 years. But it will happen. I mean, we didn't think that we're going to be where we are at 5 years back when UPI launched. So we'll definitely get there. I don't think the guiding principles change, though. The Uber level guiding principle being to actually build for future scale, right? What changes, though, is the approach that we had taken probably from the kind of architectural choices that we made to have a complete share nothing architecture, to have sharded databases, to have isolated infrastructure in different pockets, talking to each other through APIs. Some of those will continue to work. Some of the other things will change. We'll have to start thinking a little out of the box. So if we are designing for scale, the scale of the numbers that you just spoke about, we'll have to start seeing how do we actually remove the number of hops in a transaction significantly. If there are 4, 5, 6 hops in a transaction today, is there an approach by which we can cut it down by half or even further reduce it to ensure that we're able to kind of meet the scale? How do we take advantage of significantly decentralized computing power that we have on all these devices today? The devices have got so much more intelligent, have so much more computing capacity, have so much more storage. Is there an opportunity to move the payment decisioning, the authentication and authorization more and more towards the edge, taking away the kind of centralized workload that we see on the networks and the banks? So I think while the guiding principles themselves don't change, the kind of scale that we need to achieve will change the approach to implementing those guiding principles. And I think that will apply to everybody in the ecosystem, including us. The other part that we have to take a look at is how do we actually leverage one of the things that UPI has shown so clearly about kind of building more open ecosystems. Like the UPI interoperability is one of the core tenets of its success. If we have to achieve the $10 trillion digital payments vision that we have for the country, it can't be done by 1, 2, or 3 players. It has to be done collectively, where a lot of the functionality keeps getting unbundled. There have to be players that come in the risk and fraud arena that are able to actually build for this scale, that are partnering with a lot of companies like us. Or we take our risk and fraud systems and open it up for others to use more aggressively. Similarly, we'll have to actually look at whether there are other solutions that are coming from a security perspective to enable offline payments. So I think we'll start looking at a lot of innovation that gets unbundled and a deeper partnership model that comes into play to achieve that vision.
Right. Rahul, you spoke about the open ecosystem approach as well as, you know, an unbundling partnership effort. Can you give us some examples of the way you've already done this so far in terms of taking an open ecosystem approach in how you build?
I think Pulse itself is a great example of an open ecosystem approach. While we are discussing the Pulse report, the latest Pulse report along with BCG that we have actually put out there, if you look at the Pulse data, the data has been made available through open APIs. If data is the new oil and the IP lies in the data, opening up part of the data and continuing to enrich more and more of the data is one way to actually spur innovation in the ecosystem. If today a PhonePe is actually opening up aggregate payments data, anonymized and aggregated payments data, tomorrow there are companies maybe on the merchant side that are opening up data on from, say, the food categories, the fuel categories, etc. What you will realize that data itself spurs a lot of the innovation. It could be innovation on the risk and fraud side, as I spoke about. It could be innovation on the offline payment side in terms of the kind of solutions that can come about, where we can pilot such solutions for more learning. So I think Pulse itself is a great example of open data. The other things that we have done that we believe are along the lines of the core principle of partnership, interoperability, and openness is the Switch platform. So until Switch, most of the time, broad-based platforms like us would build all the use cases on top of, say, core payments by themselves. Everything would be a verticalized play that is built in-house. What we realized is that if we need to actually make what our vision was, that if there are 10 typical spends a person has on a daily basis, we should be an option for all those 10 spends for the user and over time become the choice. If you were to do that and you were to do that yourself, it would take 10 years if you're doing it right, right? If you really take a fairly simplistic view, you'd actually have to invest in each category or use case deeply year over year. With a partnership model, what we did was we married the kind of scale that we have on a fast, reliable, and secure payments platform like PhonePe with the use cases that a lot of partners bring about for commute, for food, for ticketing, etc., onto the PhonePe platform. And that actually accelerated both the usage of PhonePe as a payment platform as well as the customer acquisition for a lot of these other products that are in the Switch platform. So I think Switch is another great example of open platforms. And finally, with interoperability, PhonePe has its own wallet, but we have never actually pushed the wallet, the PhonePe wallet, as a primary instrument for the consumer and let it be a choice to the consumer. And we've also integrated other wallets onto the PhonePe platform to actually respect the fact that ultimately consumer choice is what should be king when it comes to actually building a horizontal platform like PhonePe. So I think there are many such examples, but the larger point being that being open about data and being open to partnerships and having principles such as interoperability is the only way to actually achieve the kind of scale that we are all looking to achieve in a very short period of time.
Rahul, you know, when you talk about 110 million payments a day, most of us, you know, take that for granted. But I'm sure there's humongous technical infrastructure that's actually driving this volume of payments. And even if a payment gets delayed by a few seconds or fails, people immediately get anxious, they get paranoid, they perhaps also get angry with apps like PhonePe. But can you give us a sense of the kind of investment that you are putting as far as technology is concerned to in order to drive, you know, this volume of payments every day, month after month?
One of the very early decisions that we made was to actually invest extremely deeply in all our infrastructure. So we are hosted in our own data centers. We're not hosted on a public cloud, primarily for two reasons. But that has played a huge role in terms of being able to control the experience of payments end to end. One of the reasons that we are not on any public cloud and are hosted in our own data centers is that we are in a digital payments is a highly regulated and a very, very sensitive and critical infrastructural piece. Data localization has always been guidelines by RBI, like many other central banks, when it comes to payments. And very early on, we decided that to be able to actually truly honor that, we have to have on-prem infrastructure. And secondly, the kind of scale that we're seeing today, if that is what we were shooting for, it's actually significantly more cost effective to actually have a CapEx model where we own the infrastructure versus being on a public cloud. Having taken the decision to be on-prem or on-premise with our infrastructure because of these reasons, what we've done is we've built out infrastructure which is extremely performant, tuned with configurations that are more suited for a transactional environment like us, and being able to actually then meet the kind of latency numbers when it comes to payments that is not just acceptable from a user perspective, but beats market significantly. So today we have more than 200,000 cores or compute power under our management. We manage more than 10 petabytes of storage in our own data centers. We are investing in infrastructure that is fairly future provisioned to give us significantly more scale when it comes to computing power in a smaller location or a smaller data center, like liquid immersive cooling servers or direct liquid cooled servers instead of the typical air cooled servers. In addition to that, we continue to actually build on top of our own infrastructure with software that is highly differentiated. So we build our own core platform constructs, payments being obviously one of the core platform constructs, but risk and fraud and accounting being the others. And the final thing is that we've actually taken a view of building data intelligence into systems. It may seem that it's very obvious that we should be doing that, but in a lot of companies, we go through a long journey of using data through basic rule engines before we get to the point that we're actually building data intelligence systems. In our case, because of the scale, we are forced to actually invest in that very early on. And we build systems, whether it is our risk and fraud system, whether it's our offer system, or whether it's a payment system. We have data intelligence built into each of these so that we're able to do millisecond decisioning based on a very large amount of data in every transactional path. So I think there have been a lot of these investments along the way that have actually ensured that we are able to give the kind of best payments experience. One example of that is what we call as a kill switch. So we have something which is basically a predictive logic that kicks in real time when you're doing a payment to see what will be the probability of success of that payment. And we actually ensure that we don't let that payment go through if it is below an acceptable threshold of potential success. And that kind of logic basically works on both a look back as well as a look forward predictive logic across a large amount of data, but has to actually respond within 3 or 4 milliseconds to ensure that we don't delay that particular payment. So that's the kind of investment that we've done to be able to kind of cater to the experience that you're talking about.
Yeah, I think, Rahul, the kill switch is particularly effective because, you know, I mean, if you end up making a payment, the money gets debited from your account. But, you know, a Swiggy or a Zomato doesn't receive the money and they tell you, you know, you will be refunded. People, you know, they don't like waiting even for 24 hours or 12 hours for that money to come back into their account. So I think the kill switch is an effective tool there. But let me also ask you, if I look at the PhonePe Pulse BCG report, it also spoke about how the next wave of growth is going to come from tier 3 and tier 4 cities in India. And, you know, you already are present in multiple hundreds of thousands of PIN codes. But how are you kind of ensuring that the customer service standards, the quality, the reliability is uniform across these PIN codes in smaller towns that, you know, may not have great bandwidth or great internet?
There are actually three kind of investments that we've made very specifically with respect to the fact that payments is an extremely primitive operation and therefore applies to the entire diaspora of the country, right? One is purely on the product front itself. If you look at PhonePe, And this applies not just to PhonePe, it applies to any product, whether it's in the payment space or not, if it's applicable for the as broad as PhonePe is about the simplicity of our UI itself. We are extremely utilitarian when it comes to being an app. And the core reason for that is, unless you're very utilitarian, you will not be able to convey in a simplistic manner to any individual in the country about how to actually make a payment using PhonePe. So that's one of the core design principles when it comes to how the app manifests itself for users. Secondly, we take a what is called a preventive approach to a cure approach when it comes to consumer angst. The kill switch is one extremely good example about a preventive approach. But the other things that we do with a preventive approach is about guidance mechanisms. Depending upon which life stage that the user is on a platform, we actually kick in guidance mechanism into the app to make sure that there aren't mistakes that they do, or they don't go through a fair amount of confusion in how to use the app and back away as we realize that the user is already an engaged user. And this could kick in based on the life stage of the user on the platform, or it could be just because the user, while you could be using the PhonePe app for peer-to-peer payments forever, but you've never tried purchasing gold on PhonePe. The first time you try to purchase gold, we take you through a very different journey than it is for another user. So we have those kind of capabilities, which we put it into the preventive bucket. Finally, when it comes to customer support, today at our scale, even 1% or 0.5% of users or transactions, or even less than that, creating a ticket, customer support ticket, is a huge volume. And it'll be next to impossible if we were to actually look at those tickets in any manual manner. And secondly, impossible to maintain any sort of consistency of quality of response. So what we've taken an approach is to actually use automation. 92% of all the tickets that get generated on PhonePe are responded to and resolved through technology in the first shot itself without them being reopened. We have, again, the advantage of data. Being a payments platform, the intention of the user and any of the interactions of the user failing, it's very easy to pinpoint what the reason is. So what we do is, when we see failures, we proactively communicate to the customer saying that we understand that this failure has happened. Your money may be blocked. Don't worry, it will automatically be refunded in X time. During that time, we kick in systems to be able to do reconciliation on our end, reconciliation with our banking partners, reconciliation with NPCI. We keep the communication going. And when the money does get actually released, we actually close the ticket with the communication and the right information for the consumer to check. Similarly, when you spoke about refunds, if there are failures in, say, a recharge or a bill payment on PhonePe, we do the same thing. We kick in the communication early on and do the refund. Offers and offer applicability. If there was some change in the applicability or there's a problem with the offer not being applied, etc., we do the same thing. So trying to take a very proactive approach and using automation to be able to actually close out the tickets is one very effective way to earn back the confidence of any consumer that has possibly had a bad experience on a transaction on PhonePe. But the first effort is actually to try and ensure that they don't have that. And that's where things like the kill switch come in.
Rahul, you know, while we have seen the first wave of UPI-led growth happening in a huge way, what do you think is going to drive the next phase of UPI? Because if you look at NPCI in the last year, a lot of innovations around UPI on feature phones, offline payments, their recent move to allow UPI on credit, a lot of exciting things happening. But which of these do you think is going to lead to growth, for the next wave of UPI, the next wave of digital payments?
First of all, I think the most exciting startup, company, organization to be a part of today is NPCI. The number of things that NPCI is actually working on.
They will be thrilled to hear that.
I'm very serious, and I actually give them an immense amount of credit in terms of how they keep thinking about improving the product or creating step jump product experiences on top of UPI. And my only worry is I keep playing catch up in trying to actually ensure that we are able to bring everything on board. I'm personally excited by all of them. I think each of them serves a different purpose. For example, I believe that Aadhaar-based setting of UPI PIN can be a game changer because it can bring the next wave of users who are significantly more comfortable with using their Aadhaar-based authentication than a debit card-based authentication for setting the UPI PIN. It may seem very small, but it's actually very, very important to actually bring the next set of users who are probably not even set their PIN on UPI yet, because either they don't have a debit card, or actually most people do have a debit card, but they don't even know about it, right? Then there is UPI Lite, which is actually, I think, extremely important from the overall scalability of UPI itself. Given that we continue to see this exponential growth, how can we actually cater to this growth? And UPI Lite is one of those initiatives which moves the transaction more and more towards the edge, like I was talking about before. And UPI International. I think UPI International can be a game changer because it has the opportunity for us as a country to lead from a technology perspective in the next generation of retail payments abroad also in international countries. And obviously, it serves a great purpose for Indians who are traveling abroad. I mean, latest statistics shows that the growth rate of tourists from India, the growth rate, is the highest in the world. Right. So Indians are traveling more and more abroad. They're spending more. And I think UPI International will be another thing that can actually be significantly important in the overall repertoire of UPI itself.
The other innovations that we are we have been hearing about, reading about in the last year are around account aggregators, the ONDC, which, you know, PhonePe, I think, has also joined, well as things like the digital rupee. Which of these excites you the most?
I think purely from the kind of scope of impact that it can have, I think ONDC is the most exciting. It's a paradigm shift, and it's also an extremely difficult problem to solve. And I think just because of that, it excites me the most. ONDC can be a complete change in the way local and hyperlocal commerce happens in the country. And it can be significantly additive to the lives of MSME sellers. It can be additive to the lives of consumers. And it can bring in a lot of players in the B2B space for fulfillment, for settlement, etc. So I think it impacts at such a broad scale that I think if I was forced to actually pick one thing that I'm most excited about, I think it would be ONDC. But account aggregator for me, again, personally, is something that can open up flow-based credit significantly, which again is something that specifically for the MSME market is very, very close to me, as it is close to a lot of players in the ecosystem and a lot of think tanks and the regulators. So I think just from that perspective, I would believe that account aggregator is a close second, if not almost an equal to ONDC. Digital rupee has its advantages, and digital rupee obviously brings significant amount of traceability to money, which is an important problem to solve. And it actually brings efficiency to money handling, which is again a very, very important problem to solve, because you don't want to be just printing money and managing money, which has a huge cost to itself. But if I were to stack rank, I think it would be ONDC with account aggregator being a close second, and then maybe trailing that would be digital rupee.
Yeah, Rahul, you to have a play everywhere with, you know, a bunch of licenses. So I'm sure a lot of technologies that you want to be excited about. But let me come to the challenges. You know, which do you see as your biggest challenge? Is it around policy, competition, because WhatsApp is significantly upping its game in India? Or is it going to come from, regulation? For example, the NPCI had spoken about this 30% market cap for players in UPI. We don't know yet if, you know, they will extend that deadline. So in terms of the challenges, map them for us.
I think competition is never a challenge. I think it's extremely important, and we have a healthy paranoia about every new entrant. But we also back ourselves on our product to ensure that we can stay ahead and stay extremely relevant when it comes to competition. Challenges, I would say, are in two areas. One would be in general about policy. One of the areas that we have been vocal in the past is, I think, to kind of scale digital payments, and I kind of take it to the level that we are talking about in terms of $10 trillion being the size of digital payments in the country, I think payments by itself needs to be extremely sustainable, and so that the investment across the board by every actor in the ecosystem is deep. So in this entire conversation, we've spoken about one thing, which is saying that the investments have to be deep by every player in the ecosystem to kind of achieve that. But to make those investment, I think we have to ensure the payments by itself is sustainable. And therefore, MDR or any other model that is there needs to be there to ensure that that thing happens. So I think that's just an example of how policy can play a double-edged sword, because in our case, policy actually has been extremely progressive too. A lot of the changes that we are seeing, the push on UPI, the push on account aggregator, the push on ONDC is first globally. So I think while that push is there, to kind of ensure that it's always sustainable is definitely one of the areas that I would say is a challenge, but it's also a constant conversation that we keep having with the policymakers and the regulators. Regulation itself, I think, has been largely very progressive. It's always been about what is the next new thing we can do, obviously with the right checks and balances to ensure that the consumer at the forefront is not impacted. So I don't really put that in the bucket of challenges. The challenge for me, like for everybody else, is to also ensure that while we are scaling, keeping in mind that this is still a extremely regulated space, to be very compliant, to have a very high level of governance, and to ensure that the focus on risk and fraud systems, on security systems, is paramount and always ahead of scale. To try and scale without taking any of these into consideration is a big fallacy, right? To never lose sight of that, and to ensure that that is something that is always there in the company as we grow, is, I think, one of the internal challenges that I think we have a complete control on, but something that we can never take our eyes off the ball on.
Final question, Rahul, when was the last time you used cash, or for what transactions do you use cash instead of PhonePe?
I don't use cash. I actually don't know when I last used cash, because wherever I go, I tell people that, hey, if you're not accepting digital cash, why is that? Then I tell them I'm the founder of PhonePe. I give them my phone number. I set up an account for them if they don't have it, and tell them that if they ever have any problem, they can call me. That's actually convincing enough for them if they're not accepting it already.
A true salesman at heart. But on that note, thank you very much, Rahul, for joining us on this edition of PhonePe Pulse, Speed of Progress. Great having you on the show.
PhonePe Pulse, Beat of Progress, powered by Money Control.